morning, and Hey, nice. Welcome to the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming universal Unitarian congregation. My name is Sonia Furneaux. I serve on the campus committee with of several people. Although Cindy, our minister, Reverend Dr. Cindy Lanthrum, is not at today's service, I have the beautiful option of introducing my friend and neighbor, Ben Otherton Zeman. Ben, we met over dogs, our love of dogs. He has dedicated his energy, his compassion, his talents, and his life to social justice and specifically domestic violence. His journey has taken him inward and has taken him around the world, 46 countries he has spoken in. We are very honored to have him as not only speaking with us today, but also as our member of our church, as he is enriching our community. He has moved quickly from a neighbor to my friend and has been such for a decade. I am delighted that he is part of this community and really excited that he is here to speak with us today. Everyone is invited to coffee hour after to get to meet him more in person and get to know him as I do. If you want to join us at coffee hour, you exit through this door and you use the stairs or the elevator down one level and follow the signs to Fellowship Hall. Child care is available during the service in the nursery. If the need arises any time during the service, please feel free to take your children there where they'll be well cared for. The nursery is located in the lower level of our fellowship hall, which is, again, through these doors and two levels down via the elevator or the stairs. On most Sundays, we have religious education classes. The children will depart after the first part of this service. Please see the order of service for the information about our program. If it is your first time here with us, welcome. Welcome, welcome. Please sign one of our guest books. They are located in the vestibule, right behind in the entrance, or also at our visitor's table at coffee hour. All right. So at this point, we want to put all your cell phones on worship mode and greet your neighbor.
As Sonia Furneaux comes up to light our chalice, I read these words of opening. Here we have come into the sacred space, quieter now with our readiness, hushed voices, hoping, trusting for so many things, for connection, for communion, for inspiration, for information, for healing, for wholeness, for words, for music, for celebration and consolation. Here we have come into this space, bringing all who we are. Let us be willing, however we are changed. Another short announcement. Today's service may be emotionally challenging to some. Lay ministers are available in the parlor for anyone who wishes to step out and sit with them, or if you at any point in time feel the need to step out during the service, please don't hesitate to do so. Make sure you take care of yourselves. Also, it's recommended that any eighth grader and below goes to RE today. Please join me in our opening hymn, This Little Light of Mine, number 118. Please rise if you're willing and able.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Everywhere
Now join us in the recital of our covenant. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. From all that dwell below the skies, let words of love and peace arise. Let joyful songs of praise be sung through every land, by every tongue.
Please be seated. I have a book that I've gotten years and years ago called Passages. It is written by a bunch of survivors, advocates, and everyone else who helped the people going through this very difficult time of domestic violence. Sure. And the poem that I chose is called Stroke by Stroke by Mary Walsh. Stroke by stroke. You kept me in my place with fear imposed that you meted heartlessly, mercilessly, and malevolently. Stroke by stroke, I pulled away from you to keep a safe distance and try to regroup cautiously, carefully, and perturbatively. Stroke by stroke, circling the vortex of your hatred, I treaded the waters, hoping against hope, anxiously, apprehensively, hypervigilantly. And stroke by stroke, you quickened the pace as pent-up rage sought some easy prey, and you chose me. Pointedly, intentionally, and determinedly. Suck into the maelstrom, the current spiraled me down. Muffled echoes of your anger continue to resound as your torments went on, derisively, divisively, and decisively, stroke by stroke. Spit back to the surface, then once more pulled back down. The cycle went on and on, as I struggled more, listlessly, dolefully, despairingly, stroke by stroke. Then, finally thrown clear, out of rage of your wake, karma currents arose, and I saw just what was at stake, that the flotsam and the jetsam were pieces of me. And realization burst forth, overwhelmingly, miraculously, and revealingly. Stroke by stroke, I pulled away from you, with no more need now to be drowned, into the fruitless fray of your accusations and recriminations, repeatedly, regressively, dejectedly. And now that I'm free, as the waves lap over me, I swim gratefully, appreciatively, and purposely, stroke by stroke. And now would you bow your heads in prayer? This is for the woman and their caregivers, and the little kids who are residing in domestic violence shelters throughout our country. Please think of them during the silent meditation.
For the time for all ages, I brought some friends.
Hello, everyone. Kermit the Frog here. Hope you all had a good Thanksgiving. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Yay! Amber,
is also here. Hi, kids. How many kids had a good Thanksgiving? Yay! Where did you go for Thanksgiving? You're hiding. Seems a bit of a transition from that last bit to this one.
Yeah, but I figured it was a good idea, you know, having puppets on a Violence Against Women sermon.
Yes, well, what do we do now?
Well, how about we sing a song?
Sure! Amber loves Kermit's songs!
Okay, well then, why don't we, given the topic, sing a song about gender socialization?
That just seems really specific.
Yeah, but do you remember being in a toy store?
Sure, Emma remembers being up on a shelf.
Yeah, well, how was the toy store laid out?
It was strange. It was pink on one side for the girls and blue on the other side for the boys. It seemed strange and arbitrary to Emma.
Well, let's sing about that then. It's not easy being blue. There's so many things that you're not supposed to do, like have feelings, be gay, eat quiche, or cry.
Emma understands. And it's not easy being pink. You're judged by how you look, not how you think. And you're paid less and abused and harassed when you walk by.
So I think we can both agree.
The system's bad for you and me.
It certainly has room for improvement.
So let's join the feminist movement.
And it's not easy, social change. You get made fun of, you get called names. When gender roles, you try to rearrange.
And it's women who've built the bridge. It's men who have male privilege. So men should listen to women for a change. Thank you.
Thank you.
During November, we share our weekly offering with Habitat for Humanity of North Central Massachusetts. The offering will now be given and received. Today's reading is from feminist author Jessica Valenti. Whether it's reproductive rights, violence against women, or just plain old vanilla sexism, most issues affecting women have one thing in common, says Jessica Valenti. They exist to keep women in their place, to make sure that we're acting appropriately, whatever that means. And today, November 25th, is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. So when it came up that there was a vacancy for preaching, I volunteered, and I'm really thrilled to be able to present these words for you. As Sonia let you know, I'm a new member of the church and also a fellow dog owner, together with my wife, Lucinda, who's with us today. I'm also a member of the Domestic Violence Awareness Group, along with several of you. And as it turns out, there's a lot more involved with being a guest sermon person than I thought. So thank you, Neil, for covering for me and for getting everything on time to Dee Dee. And thanks to Hector Costanzos and the other members of the Domestic Violence Awareness Group and of the worship committee. In the year 1962, a woman named Fannie Lou Hamer was on a bus in Mississippi, headed to register to vote for the first time. In 1989, a young woman named Natalie Provost went to her mechanical engineering class at the École Polytechnique in Montreal University. In 1995, a woman who we'll call Betty for today drove to New Hampshire for a vacation with her husband and three children. And just this past Monday, Dr. Tamara O'Neill was headed to work at Chicago's Mercy Hospital, where she was a physician. I rang the chime, the singing bowl, several times, and I was trying to ring it about every 12 seconds. And that's because, as Diane and others know, it's every 12 seconds somewhere in the United States that a man abuses the woman that he has promised to love. And every 2 minutes somewhere in the United States, a man rapes a woman. It's usually a woman that he knows. But most men don't rape, and most of us don't abuse. So why don't we hear more voices of men, those of us who don't rape and those of us who don't abuse? Voices of men should be raised against violence against women, and voices of men should be raised in support of the women who spend every day working to end violence against women. But most times, voices of men, we stay quiet when it comes to challenging what is mostly our own gender's violence. And I'll say more about that a little bit later. But I also do want to mention that domestic violence and sexual violence also happens to men. It happens to heterosexual men, and it happens in the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. But for me, in my years of working in shelters for battered women and rape crisis centers, most of the perpetrators of violence that I have come into contact with and have heard about look like me. They're men. And most of the victims that I've worked with are girls and women. Women like Dr. Tamara O'Neill, who many of you know, having heard it in the news, that she was shot and killed by her ex-fiancé at Chicago Mercy Hospital this past Monday. And women like Betty, the woman I mentioned before going on vacation to New Hampshire with her husband and her three kids. It turns out for her, the vacation was a desperate attempt on her part to stop her abusive husband's pattern of abusing her and controlling her and her kids. It was the hot summer, and they stopped at a rest area. Betty went inside to use the bathroom, and when she came out, her husband had driven off, kidnapping their three kids. It was a small New England town, the New Hampshire town, and she ended up at the police station crying and without shoes. I went there and brought her back to our shelter where I worked. We got her shoes, we got her feet cleaned up, and together with the state police, we got her kids back, and her husband was arrested for kidnapping them. We gave them all changes of clothes and brought Betty's whole family to the shelter where they could be safe and be together. This is, by the way, a lot of the work that is done by the places like Voices Against Violence, where I used to work, Diane mentioned that the displays are downstairs. So I want to echo her urge to come and look at them. And when I worked at this shelter, it was my first job in the movement, and I had never encountered shelter kids before. And so they tend to respond in broad brushstrokes one of two ways, either just sort of totally hostile to everything or just sort of clinging to all positive adult attention. And Betty's daughter, who I'll call, what's her pseudonym? Rachel, was 4 years old at the time, and she was the latter. So every time I came to work, there would be this sort of four-year-old ball of energy who would run up and give me the hugest hug in the world. So 2 months later, they left to start a new life in a new state, and we wished them well. There was a tearful goodbye, but I thought that was it. I thought we wouldn't hear from them again. But hear from them we did. Now, this was a while. I'll get back to that, too. I'm going to weave in and out of stories. So this was a while back for me. But I do remember Betty mentioning her minister back home. And I do remember this minister being not so helpful. She had gone to him to report her husband's abusive and controlling behavior. And the minister encouraged them to go to couples counseling, which puts the onus on both of them rather than the onus on him for being abusive. It's a very dangerous practice, according to the feminist women who have taught me this work. The minister also reminded her of the sanctity of marriage. And frankly, this isn't unusual for this minister at the time, and still, unfortunately. A lot of churches and a lot of denominations have become part of the problem rather than part of the solution. But there have been activists and feminist ministers, rabbis, and other clergy that I've gotten to know that have sent the message that the sanctity of a marriage isn't violated by a survivor leaving. It's violated by an abuser being violent. It has taken activism within our own denomination, according to Reverend Cindy, to bring about the 1991 sexism audit that we had denominationally called Cleansing Our Temple, and to pass the 1993 general resolution entitled Violence Against Women. But feminists have also taught us, feminists have taught me anyway, that helping individual survivors isn't enough and isn't going to solve the problem. Feminists like Jennifer Valenti, whom I read just now, have taught me that, as she put it, most issues affecting women have one thing in common: they exist to keep women in their place. And they've taught me that an individual like Betty's ex-husband, or Dr. O'Neill, Tamara O'Neill's ex-husband, they can't abuse someone without a culture that favors my gender over yours, without a culture that favors whites over people of color, without a culture that favors heterosexuals over gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. Feminists have taught me that male physical violence, that femicide, or the murder of women, can't exist without the daily violence of street harassment, of pay inequity, workplace sexual harassment, the objectification of women, sexist jokes, and stereotyping. Feminists have taught me that to stop violence against women, you have to challenge restrictive gender roles, the way Kermit and Elmo just did. And trans feminists have taught me to challenge the gender binary altogether. And intersectional feminists have taught me that you can't stop sexism without also stopping racism, homophobia, transphobia, classism, anti-Semitism, and ableism. This is a bit of a long list of things to fix. You can find a church that won't make survivors go to couples counseling, but what church is going to commit to all those things, to stopping street harassment, etc.? Our church. What church is going to commit to pay equity for women? Our church. What church is going to commit to stopping workplace sexual harassment? Our church it is. In 1989, Natalie Provost got to her mechanical engineering class, only to have it taken over by a man named Mark Lapine. He ordered the women and the men to opposite sides of the classroom. No one moved at first, thinking he was joking. But like Dr. Tamara O'Neill's ex-fiancé, Mark Lapine had a gun. So he fired his gun into the ceiling. 9 women went to one side, about 50 men went to the other. He ordered the men to leave, and they did. He told the women, "I'm fighting feminism." Natalie Provost responded, "Look, we're just in French," but he was speaking in French, and she responded in French, "Look, we're just women studying engineering, just students intent on leading a normal life." Mark Lapine responded, "You're women, you're going to be engineers, you're all a bunch of feminists. I hate feminists." Then he shot Provost and many other women. She survived, but 14 women did not, the day of what's become known as the Montreal Massacre. Now, this massacre really brought the country of Canada to a screeching halt at that point, from my understanding. Like the United States, Canada had a high rate of gun ownership, but unlike us, they hadn't had many mass shootings. And in the aftermath, Canadian men in particular wanted to do something. They wanted to have some sort of indication that they were opposed to men's violence against women. So some of them came up with the idea of this, of the white ribbon. And they began what became an international campaign, the White Ribbon Campaign. And I know some of you have white ribbons already on your name tag. It was a pledge to never commit, condone, or remain silent about men's violence against women. They didn't know if it would go anywhere, but that year, hundreds of thousands of Canadian men wore white ribbons, and half of their parliament and their prime minister. I've brought white ribbons today for anyone who is willing to wear a white ribbon on their name tag. Whose church is going to wear white ribbons on their name tag? Our church is. On August 31st, 1962, Fannie Lou Hamer and 17 other African Americans rode a Mississippi bus to register to vote. She had been at a SNCC workshop, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Thank you. It was a workshop on how to register. She didn't know she could register to vote until that workshop, and so she raised her hand and said, "I'll do it." And the next day, her and 17 others took a bus to register themselves to vote. But the whites in the community had heard about this, and so many of them, many white men, drove their cars around the bus and honked and were harassing, were leaning out the window, were shouting racial epithets, were waving guns. Fannie Lou Hamer looked around the bus. She saw that many of the folks on the bus were getting nervous. She was probably getting nervous. So she began to sing, and everyone on the bus joined in, and they were less nervous after that. Can you guess what the song was? Does anyone know? "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine.
Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
I knew about the Fannie Lou Hamer story, but I'd never heard about. Did anyone know about the song in the bus? I hadn't heard about that until I heard it on NPR a few weeks ago. Now, I promised I'd get to the end of Betty's story. It also has a hopeful ending. I heard from her years later when I also had moved to a new state. I had organized a vigil for men against violence against women, and the television cameras are there, and so there was this story done, and Betty saw the TV spot, and she called the station and asked for my number, and the reporter said, well, no, but I'll give him your number. So I called her up. I'd forgotten her name, actually, so I was like, I don't know who this is. So I do that thing where you call and you like fake it until you hear the person's voice and then you try to remember. So, but she had a really distinctive accent. So right away, I knew it was her, and I was just so thrilled to hear from her, and she had done great. She had found a support group for survivors of domestic violence in this new state, and she had gotten a job, and she had, you know, made friends, and I heard like little girl voice in the background, and I was like, oh, is that Rachel? And I hear at the same time, oh, is that the guy with the really long hair? You have to trust me, it was years ago. You know, their lives weren't perfect, but they were better. And they were better, you know, largely because of their own bravery, their own choices, but they're also better because we had helped her. And that there, because there were agencies like the ones you're supporting with your donations downstairs. They were better because we were part of a movement to reshape the world into a world where this violence does not happen. And I do believe we can shape a church and a world where women and girls are valued not just for how you look, but for what's on your mind. I believe we can shape a world and a church where the Me Too survivors are listened to and are believed instead of blamed. We can shape a world where guns are taken from those who abuse their partners. We can shape a church and a world where we can look at every survivor in the eye and say, this was not your fault. I mean, it was never your fault. We can say you're not alone. And we can say there's help available. Like Hector said, someone wants to talk, we're here, and there are community agencies here as well. We can say in the words of Libby Roderick, how can anyone ever tell you that you're anything less than beautiful? How can anyone ever tell you that you're less than whole? How can anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. Whose church? Our church. Amen. Blessed be. Please turn in your teal hymnal to hymn number 1053 by Libby Roderick, How Can Anyone Ever Tell You? Don't let anyone ever tell you you are anything less than beautiful. Don't let anyone ever tell you you are less than whole. Don't let anyone fail to notice that your love is a miracle. How deeply you're connected to my soul. If each of us raises our voice of all genders, if each of us stops blaming victims and starts holding abusers accountable, if each of us starts supporting agencies like the ones that we're supporting downstairs, and someday this violence won't happen every 12 seconds or every 2 minutes. It'll happen hardly at all. Amen. Blessed be.